Coming up next, it's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. I hope you enjoyed listening to Dr. Sidorov in the last hour. Emotions are a real thing and can certainly affect the quality of our life.
Yeah, I think we'll be able to have him back probably sometime before his Esalen workshop, which I guess is at the end of February.
February 20th.
Yeah, we'll be sure and let y'all know so he can do a book signing or something.
Yes, he said he'd be willing to do one in the area.
Yeah. All right.
So let's get on to some of our Dr. Future news. We're going
to
do the second hour.
Not to confuse people.
First this time, and we do the first hour second. So here we are.
That's right.
Second hour doing the first.
Backwards into the future.
Okay.
And you can go check out our links on the drfutureshow.com website on the links page, and then you'll get to see where all of Dr. Future's crib notes are for the fascinating facts he brings us every week.
That's true. And I'm updating them all the time. Like, you might not find last week's notes to be the same next week.
That's right. You got to check them out now because the future is changing fast.
A couple things. I thought it was interesting that The Interview netted $15 million in online sales during its opening 4 days.
Rah, rah, rah. Go Seth Rogen.
Yeah, Sony has revealed it. Didn't come through the hack. Sony actually revealed it.
Uh-huh.
$15 million in consumer spending just from home platforms. It looks to me like they're getting some success rate. This was a big experiment with releasing a movie simultaneously at home and in the theaters.
Yeah, kind of an ad hoc experiment, it sounds like.
Yeah, a bit of an ad hoc.
And in fact, I think they canceled the theater part of it, mostly. Although it is playing at the theater. I noticed it's playing at Scotts Valley Cinema right now at the Cinelux there. And
I did notice that Cinelux is carrying it. Now, what's that all about?
Well, I guess they got a hold of it. So, if you want to see The Interview in a theater, folks, Scotts Valley is a definite location.
Well, it's
that.
Also downtown at the Del Mar.
Okay.
Which I'd expect. That was the more of the indie film theater in Santa Cruz.
Uh-huh, right.
Though in the indie films, I'm looking forward to seeing the one about the inventor of the computer, the Turing test, the Turing story.
The imitation game.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
And that's got a lot of buzz among our friends.
How that might have created us winning World War II.
Sure.
You know, it's a significant film.
Yeah, a lot of people attribute to our ability to crack the Germans' code machine as the reason why we were able to succeed on D-Day, right?
That's right.
And that was the turning point in the war, really.
Oh,
so I hear.
Oh, and another related topic here, or maybe not so related. Gregory comments that he's curious that the hacking of Sony happened right after the torture report. That came out, you know, about how the CIA tortures.
Oh, is he suggesting that perhaps it is a false flag headline to distract our attention?
I don't know, Greg. I haven't put that two and two together just yet. But,
I suppose
anything's possible.
Oh,
I see. To divert attention away
Okay,
from it. I see. Just as a ploy to get our attention off of the torture report.
Right. Let's focus our attention on a silly movie and how that can rock the world. Okay.
How long can you dwell on the torture report anyway? I guess as long as you have the attention for it. But I think the fact that the CIA has even put it out there is amazing. I think that's quite a shift in government policy. Usually that kind of stuff is kept secret.
Yeah, and you know, just if you do want to talk about the torture report and last week's news that way, I thought it really spoke well of the integrity of our leaders to
it worked.
Bring
yeah, that's
it
what
up
we're talking
again,
about it now, right, Greg?
And to really say, hey, you know, all you leaders who thought that torture was okay, you were wrong then and you're wrong now. And if we can't talk about what our government is doing in our name, that itself is a problem. Mm. And so to just change the conversation like to the Cheney level of like, well, did we get something useful by torturing people? That's really not the kind of people that we are or that we want to be. So, yeah.
Okay.
Let's talk about the torture.
Yeah, well, no, I'd rather not.
All right, let's not.
But there is an article that was it was in Salon about how evil torturers catch a break, how America got distracted from a national travesty. So if you want to know more about it, thesalon.com has an article on this very topic.
Right.
So, yeah, it comes down to, I think, emotional literacy.
Mm-hmm. Emotional literacy? What? Yeah. You mean in terms of the interview or in terms of
I think in the long term is that the more that we have emotional literacy, the less we will do things like this, the less we will have all these secrecies and lies that go on.
Yeah. And what gives rise to emotional literacy, I wonder?
Open communication about feelings, starting at a very young age. Okay. I think that's part of it.
I agree. I think that helps a lot, definitely.
Now, in terms of other interesting news, one of the questions that people have been asking is, why did we find the Air Asia plane and not Flight 370?
What do you know about that?
Well, USA Today did an interesting piece on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they pointed out that, you know, a lot of people are beginning to think, well, how come we found this one so fast and then 370 is still missing? What's going on with this? And so it's easy to make parallels between these two planes. The Flight 370 has been in the news for 8 months. And yet it's never been discovered. I mean, talk about a mystery.
Yeah.
USA Today pointed out a few basic differences that I think are worth mentioning in case you hadn't seen that.
Mm-hmm.
One was that the debris field is in relatively shallow water this time.
Oh, okay. So it didn't just get sucked into the deep ocean.
Yeah, that the Indonesian water was found in the what they call the Karamata Strait between Sumatra, Java, and Borneo. The water is about 150 feet deep. And while 370, they don't even know exactly where it might have gone down. That's a little hard. And number two was that the weather difficulties did provide information. Before it lost contact with air traffic control on Sunday, Flight 8501 had asked for permission to climb at a higher altitude to avoid tropical storm clouds, other aircraft in the area. So the controllers didn't give them permission to go higher right away.
Oh, okay, right. So there's a little bit of a clue that's where they were.
Yeah.
And that may have contributed to the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, it's time for us to go to a break. We'll be back with more on the Dr. Future Show. Stay tuned.
Talk to you in a minute.
Okay, welcome back.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We have a request to talk about the Snowden revelations that they were released over the weekend. And I wanted to finish on the reports about why AirAsia flight was found so quickly. Not the
All
other.
Right. So,
okay, so let me finish
one
that.
One conspiracy story to another.
Okay, a couple things. Tracking was working on the AirAsia flight. The size of the search area was much smaller. The weather difficulties provided information about where to look, and the debris field was in shallow water. Okay, those are the big differences in case anybody in your circles asked you about these or starts to compare
so
these two flights.
So it's just easier to find. It's just easier to find.
More information. Hey.
All right, well, now before you move on, would you like to hear a comment from Liberty?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Bring them on.
Let's say hello to Liberty. Hi, Liberty.
Hey,
welcome
Liberty.
To Dr. Future Show.
Hello, Future.
Hey there.
Good to talk to the future.
Yes, yes. How's it going in your sector of the woods here?
I just wanted to respond to something you kind of mentioned in passing, and I don't know, I guess this is some kind of anniversary point or something. You mentioned about the Germans' code machine.
Yes.
The fact that we cracked it helped us in the Second World War.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, there's a movie out on that right now.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. It would be interesting to see if they mention this. I'm pretty sure that, and I'm not home in front of my computer right now, so I can't Google it to look it up. But I'm pretty sure that I heard that there was a famous film actress back during the Second World War who was very instrumental in cracking that code. And I think it may have been Marlene Dietrich.
Hmm.
In the German... Huh.
It was some film star that one wouldn't think of. I mean, especially during that time, you know, who would have thought that a film star would...
Well, there was a famous film star named Hedy Lamarr that wrote a biography a couple years ago about how she had created spread-spectrum radio, which was apparently core to the World War II efforts in commission. So maybe you're thinking of Hedy Lamarr.
That could be. It could be. Yeah. I forgot the exact name. I guess the thing is she didn't get credit for it at the time because, of course, we were still at war. And by the time the war was over, there was so many bigger things happening that little fact of her contribution to the end of the Second World War got shoved under the rug, as it were.
Yeah, they're more recognized for their looks than their talents, typically.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So I just thought I'd throw that in, so I always find your show interesting, and I'll stay tuned.
Thanks, Liberty. I'll look into that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, please do. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it was Hedy Lamarr. I just checked that out, Liberty. Movie star, inventor of Wi-Fi, or at least the modern interpretation of Wi-Fi.
Wow. What a great tip.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, very cool.
Hedy Lamarr, just search for her, and they'll tell you about her invention of Wi-Fi in World War II and why that was important. She had a whole way of thinking about frequency skipping, which they use now on our radio station here. We're sending out a constant stream at 1080.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But in order to encrypt this, if we wanted to send an encrypted radio transmission, we would be skipping around to different frequencies constantly.
Oh.
We'd only be on this for a short period of time, and then we'd skip to another one.
Sort of like Morse code of frequencies?
You'd have to know the code of which the next frequency are. And then, of course, if you have a receiver that knows the upcoming shift in frequency codes, then you would be ahead of the game, and you'd be able to, it would seem like a seamless transmission. That we think it'll be like on one frequency. But even though we're skipping around. So this frequency skipping was, I think, something that Hedy was involved with. Wow. I could be wrong, but I think that's it.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Well, and I suggest we do some more homework. This sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And the film that we're talking about is about the Enigma machine and the person behind cracking the code on it. The Enigma was the Nazi code machine.
And it's playing at the Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
The Imitation Game.
The Imitation Game.
About Alan Turing.
You know, Alan Turing, who was also the inventor of the Turing test, which we're still experimenting with, and that's how we can tell the difference between a human and an artificial intelligent organism.
Right.
A Turing test. He helped design the test to see who's real and who's not.
Yeah, sometimes I think you're doing like a reverse Turing test, because I'm sure that you think that I'm a machine sometimes, but that I'm actually trying to prove to you that I'm a human.
Hey, John.
Hey, our friend John Monahan just
welcome to the last
in.
Show of the
Hi,
year, John.
Yeah. Something very important I had to do.
Well, I'm glad you're back.
And I'm glad you had a good psychologist on the show.
Yeah, that was good. I love Steve. He's a great guy, and he really has some clues to better health that I think are...
Yeah, he is a real living example of a deeply insightful psychologist. He really gives you good tools.
Wayne Dyer is my man. I think he's the best. He's the top guru right now.
Yeah, he's definitely doing some good work, too.
He's discovered some interesting little tricks of the mind that work for people, you know?
Yeah, right. Mm. Definitely.
Okay, well, thanks. Greg did a little research on Hedy Lamarr while we were talking, and he pointed out that in 1998, an Ottawa wireless technology developer, Wi-LAN, acquired a 49% claim to the patent from Lamarr on this frequency hopping spread spectrum invention.
Wow, Hedy had a patent, huh?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Isn't that cool?
Amazing.
Okay, now we also had a request on the latest Snowden revelations that happened this weekend. You hear about those, John?
No, I haven't.
Not till now.
Over the weekend, the German news outlet Spiegel published a story about NSA's ability to crack encrypted forms of communication. And that exposed the agency's routine interception of information. Now, they've been listening to SSLs, which are the web servers that transmit sensitive information. And it showed that the NSA has the ability to decrypt virtual private networks, VPNs.
Okay.
Which is what most corporations use to protect their data.
Uh-huh.
So NSA has cracked that. Okay.
NSA, they're everywhere.
But Snowden has cracked the NSA in his own way.
Yeah, rock, paper, scissors here. Oh, my. Well, perhaps even more significantly, the revelations pulled from this trove of documents showed that NSA has been struggling to break, at least the time these documents came out in 2012, core technologies, including PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Privacy, a Tor network. These are all things that are available to people for securing their data. Also, cSpace, something called OTR, and ZRIP, ZRIP, all very popular tools for protecting your
personal
data.
Open sourced. open source tools. So the secrecy agency is having trouble with the open source privacy.
Well, they've been struggling to break those.
Right. That's kind of ironic, don't you think?
Well, those were designed. Mayor Phil Zimmerman designed PGP so people had personal security.
Right.
That was something that would be very difficult to break. So.
Yeah.
So the Germans exposed the NSA for us?
They got it from going through reams of material that apparently Snowden had originally liberated.
Hooray for Deutschland.
Yes. But overall, it's funny because the Deutschland crypto codes of World War II are the star of this new movie.
Oh, yeah. I know a lot about it, the Enigma code.
Oh, you know about that?
And the genius who created the world's first true computer. Who was
Alan Turing.
Treated badly, Alan Turing, because he was gay.
Right.
But now it's about time he posthumously gets a hell of a lot of credit.
Yeah, he was a tortured man. At the time, it was a very difficult situation for a gay man to live.
Yeah, but he was a genius. And I have the movie from Science Special on that told the whole story of cracking the Enigma code.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this film is really what we probably want to see before too much longer.
Yeah. I think so. It's definitely timely to look at how codes have saved us and how they continue to affect the world of the secret world today.
Indeed.
Yeah. Oh, boy. On that note.
So, let's
take
talk
a
about...
break. And then we'll be back. With
okay.
More of the
Sounds good.
Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. One more thing on this NSA thing. Gregory dropped me this article from The Intercept about how the National Security Agency on Christmas Eve released 12 years of internal oversight reports that documented their abusive, improper practices.
Who released it?
The NSA.
They released it themselves.
Yeah,
huh?
It's kind of like the CIA came, and now the NSA is.
All right,
releasing.
Everybody's coming clean. Here's our dirty laundry.
Well,
folks.
Wait a minute. It's heavily redacted. You know what that means?
Yeah, they crossed out a lot.
Yeah. But they released it nonetheless.
Well,
okay.
You know, probably that's a good thing.
Well, they released it to the President's Intelligence Oversight Board. So I don't know how much of that goes out to us.
Oh, so they didn't publish it on the internet?
No. It wasn't stolen by Snowden or anything. stolen by Obama and put out.
So
on the,
all we get is this lousy headline, huh? We don't get to the meat of the paper.
They had to leave the black redaction cover-ups on the newspaper article about it. You know, like a big black.
They should, right?
Through whole sentences and whole paragraphs.
Hey, folks, check this out. Okay, what do you think they mean?
So
actually, they have
like
done
little,
that here.
This is like secret society rivalry, right? It's like, oh, hey, the CIA, they released their torture report. Well, we better release our report too, you know? The NSA, it's a competition for who can release the most secret stuff and get away with it.
Fascinating. So if you want to know more, go to The Intercept, The Intercept magazine. Okay, The Intercept will tell you all about that.
Okay.
We should be after Daddy Warbucks.
By the way, these were released in response to the Freedom of Information Act requests submitted by the American Civil Liberties Union.
Go ACLU. Keep us free.
Yeah, they gave
freedom
us something.
Freedom of speech. I mean, it's definitely something America can claim. We really practice that stuff here. We're doing our best.
Our civil liberties are in danger. That's a fact.
Well, they've always been in danger, right? I mean, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance.
That's correct. I agree with that.
From all directions. Okay, well, let's get a little lighter topic here for a moment at least. And it has to do with Back to the Future 2.
Oh,
remember
there
that film?
You go.
Yeah.
Okay, what was interesting about that film was that it takes place in 2015, upcoming year.
Yeah.
Oh, right? Prophetic.
I have a piece from the Atlantic in our links page about looking at the future from the point of view of 1985 that they portrayed. They portrayed 2015 in 1985, and it's kind of interesting to look at it to see what they got right and what they got wrong, just for fun. The biggest twin advances that the filmmakers didn't see coming were mobile internet technology. Nobody had any cell phones in the film. And on-demand personalized culture that's come from this mobile technology. No internet, per se. So what they see instead is banks of phone booths. Actually, banks of phone booths. Modern-looking, really cool-looking phones, but they're phone booths. There didn't seem to be any internet. they did show a realistic real-time traffic reports on this giant digital display in a public square, kind of like what you might see in a sports stadium, the traffic on. But nothing like the individual devices that we actually have.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
So they thought bigger is better, huh? In 1985, they could not imagine mobile phones or internet everywhere.
Well, they didn't.
Right.
Not that people weren't doing it at that point. I mean, the source was there. There was a number of databases all being accessible separately that were around, but there just wasn't a centralized internet that people were using. There was an internet itself between academic institutions and government, but that was about it.
Well, if you think about what was going on then, yeah, the internet at that point was really more of a fax net.
Yeah, so I'm surprised they didn't know about that.
Star Trek had mobile phones in the 60s.
Well, they said
the communicator badges,
communicator was the
communicators. Yeah, yeah, that's what they are.
Yeah, that's it. Okay, also there was the JVC glasses that the McFly children were wearing. And, you know, a little stretch, you could say, hey, there's Google Glass.
What were they doing with those glasses? Were they watching movies?
Well, I think there's one scene where one of Marty's teenage daughters is looking in his phone, looking at her in her JVC glasses, and like she answers a phone call, and she said, "Dad, it's for you."
Well, that never happens.
Check your JVC glasses. He was calling.
Actually, I have called my sister, and her daughter has picked up because my sister gave her phone to her daughter.
Yeah,
so you
said.
But we know mobile phone users pretty much use their own phones. And
pretty much.
You call them, and if you want someone else, you call another number.
Yeah, it's very rare that we said, can I talk to so-and-so?
Right.
Or somebody will say, oh, it's you.
Yeah, it's more like you look and you see who's on the other end.
Hey,
and then you're like, I don't have time for them right now. I'll talk to them later.
Makes you feel great.
Yeah, I know, right?
So that's an interesting thing I hadn't noticed before. This many-to-many communication has given, every dot has a name now. Every communication point is a person instead of a group of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, soon we'll forget to ask for who we want to talk to.
Oh,
we'll just assume, you know, that's who we're talking to.
Right? That's right. It'll be whoever belongs to that number.
But the president now has a red cell phone instead of a red telephone.
Is that a fact?
You know, nuclear war telephone.
You have a phone specifically when it comes from one person.
Oh, yeah. So do you think he has like a wireless red button? You know, has he gone wireless?
No, it's going to be all in the ringtones.
Ringtones
tell all these days. So your ringtone will determine who you're talking to. You'll know.
Okay.
Unless somebody spoofs them, and then you're in trouble.
All right, so back to the future.
Okay, well, Doc Brown did wear his dark cyber glasses outside. Everyone else kind of wore them in the house. Mm-hmm. He has these futuristic shades that he wears around. Now, what's interesting also in the 2015, fax was all the rage, right? Fax machines were everywhere in 1985.
Yeah.
And so they had...
That was the way that you did international communication as quickly as possible, right?
Right.
Next best thing to a phone call.
I love the faxes.
Sending
they were
paper.
Cool. Yeah. But instead of regular old mailboxes in Back to the Future 2, there are these fax boxes, and they promised to service in 0.05 seconds. So remember how long it took faxes to do their thing? You know, like a minute, 2 minutes,
right.
One page.
Yeah.
So 0.05 seconds was considered really good for a page.
Yeah, I can remember I had a job then with a financial services company, and you would watch the fax come on a screen, right? That was really modern.
Yeah.
And it would be like, you know, one line very, very slowly, one character at a time being illuminated, then the next one. It was just a little faster than a typewriter, you know?
Yeah, right. Just a little faster than...
Right. I think, was it 300 baud? That number comes to mind.
Yeah, 300 baud. That was my first modem, 300 baud. I think in the movie they had printed out, they had a dot matrix printer that would print out fax messages. Like, you're fired. So there is still plenty in the film, though, that does resemble reality. They did have a kind of a video conference call. Mm-hmm. Demonstrated. They had a smartwatch that Doc Brown used to check the weather. And they did have reference to hands-free video games. They did have a flat-screen television in the McFly home. They people, also had.
Do people still watch flat screen television? Don't they just today? Watch their? Don't they just watch their tablets?
No, no. The flat screen 4K big super big screens are all the rage today. Ultra high def 4K 60-inch should be on sale. So it's notable that they also featured facial recognition back in 1985. And that it looks kind of like what it does today.
Oh, so that they got right.
Yeah.
Facial recognition.
We've wanted facial recognition for a long time. And that's why it's so controversial, because people have been thinking about it for a long time and they can think how it could be abused for a long time. So that's why it's still a delicate subject. Right. And that's why Facebook still doesn't give us easy facial recognition for seeing our friends. I mean, they could. I mean, they use it for...
And Google had to ban it for Google Glass. They're not allowed to do facial recognition.
Yeah, people are touchy about it. Anyway, that's something that they did get.
I think it's pretty funny. Every now and then I get invited to turn on facial recognition so that my face will be recognized in other people's pictures. Like, that's what I want to see, is more of my face.
Don't you?
I can give permission for my face to be recognized. That's the new trend.
Well, it's that...
It seems like a trick to me.
You think?
I think they're just trying to get in their door. That's a foot in the door.
All right. So you have it off, do you?
I did not respond to that invitation.
Okay.
I figured if they didn't already have it, I wasn't going to give it to them.
Enough already. Okay. They had a mock-up of USA Today's news drone.
This is Back to the Future.
Back to the Future in 2015.
Back to the Future. Yeah.
Put together in 1985. Mm-hmm. They had the USA Today's news drone that promised to be always there first.
Right. And what was the headline? A hoverboard rampage destroys a courthouse. So they had hoverboard terrorists, man.
Yes. That's a bad guy, Griff Tannen. He's in a gang called the Bionic Overlords. According to Doc Brown, he had bionic implants. Mm-hmm. Doc Brown said, be careful about that Griff character. He's got a few short circuits in his bionic implants.
We can never forget Data. He's my favorite Star Trek character.
Yes. Thinking of,
he wants to be human.
Mm. Yeah, the Pinocchio of the Star Trek world.
You can't tell a lie, though, I don't think.
You can't? Well, he can speak it in many languages, so he can confuse the hell out of you. If he wanted to.
Yeah, but I don't think Data ever lied on the show.
You know? Yeah, let me think about that. You ever known Data to lie? Yeah, you're right. I can't think of any. But if anyone out there knows when Data lied, let us know, will you? 479-1080, we're going for a break. We'll be back with the final stretch of the Dr. Future Show for the year.
See you soon.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. With this just in, apparently Data once told Timothy that androids do not lie on the Star Trek. However, Data once lied to the entire crew of the USS Enterprise D regarding an incident wherein the Paxans erased the memories of the Enterprise's crew, except for Data, due to the xenophobic fear of bordering on the extreme. I think I remember that episode. Yeah.
I guess they didn't erase your memory.
Data also once lied to an entire bar full of patrons in an effort to make Ro Laren appear as a Marquis sympathizer as part of an elaborate plan to infiltrate a local resistance cell. In both these cases, Data was acting under direct orders and not by his own design. He also apparently lied to Sam Clemens about the purpose of a machine he was building when displaced in time, most likely in accordance with Starfleet's temporal displacement policy. So, there you go. Apparently, he was also captured by the Borg Queen, who grafted skin onto him. And when Data cradled the skin, he stated he was doing so simply because he was imitating the behavior of humans. And the Queen commented, quote, "You're becoming more human all the time. Now you're learning how to lie."
Oh, boy.
But apparently, Data's brother, Lore, also possessed the ability to lie and lied to Data about which of them had been constructed first. That's an old Data lore. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg. All right, Dr. Future News from Star Trek past.
And one more thing. Michael Moore chimes in here and says, Data lied and would have killed a very bad man who had just killed his assistant and was mocking Data's inability to kill him, except Data was teleported out of the place as the phaser discharged. When asked about the discharged phaser, Data said, Must have been a malfunction. So.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Yeah, we have Norma Jean on now. You have something to add to our final show this year, Norma Jean?
Yes, I thought this was kind of cute. Well, it was a crime, but I'm going to tell you about it. I'd heard about this on a Fresno station.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a new tech device you may want to look up. A couple had one of these devices installed, and it looks like a cell phone. It was just kind of sitting on their desk, the living or dining area. But it's actually a motion detector with a camera that can send images to a remote location. Well, one day the wife at work, and this is just before Christmas, decided that she wanted to look in on their new little puppy to see if he was chewing up anything or what. Yep. Well, what she saw shocked her. There was a burglar in there, in her house, feeding her little puppy treats.
I saw that. Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah, so there's no way the poor little guy could eat and bark at the same time. And so anyway, she immediately called the police. And so the police got there right away. Here was a criminal in there just scooping up all the loot he could. And then he starts to go out the front door, and here's the police waiting for him.
Yeah.
Well, that's a positive surveillance story. Thank you, Norma Jean. What a turn.
Thanks to the puppy cam.
I'm just sorry that I don't remember the name of the device, but apparently they're out there.
Yeah, the puppy cam. I remember saw you a puppy cam. So you keep track of your puppy as well as your babies. That's fantastic.
All right. There you go, folks. So surveil yourself, and some good will come of it.
Yeah. You see, don't just trust Big Brother to do the right thing.
That's right. Spy on your puppies.
Use it yourself and see if you do the right thing. Hopefully you will. And if not, you're going to get it.
All right. We are counting down here. This is very close to the last show of the year for us, for Dr. Future Show.
Okay, one of the great...
Got to squeeze these headlines in.
Okay, one of the great inventions of this year that have been talked about is, I think, Elon Musk's Hyperloop.
Hyperloop. Oh, that is a very cool design.
Yes. Remember, he had initially announced that back in 2013, he introduced the world to this dream in a 60-page white paper, and the paper caused quite a stir, and the idea basically was a levitating solar-powered supersonic train. It was a transportation revolution in the making. But the thing is that Elon did not have the time to develop the idea.
Yeah, he's busy kind of making busy electronic cars. He's making rockets that can land and take off. And yeah.
However,
somebody also has to make the train of the future.
He put it out there that others could take him up on his offer, and he'd make his, what he knows about this and his available to others. And apparently about 100 people took him up on that. And then an organization called Hyperloop Transportation Technologies formed. It's not quite a company yet, but they used a Kickstarter type program called Jumpstart Fund, a crowdsourcing hybrid service model, wherein the very workers who are going to build the Hyperloop aren't paid until the train turns a profit. But I guess you're part owners in the concept.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a great way to fund a company. I'm sure no train has ever been funded this way before.
Probably not. I mean, very few things have been funded this way.
Uh-huh. Especially a floating train.
Right.
So
floating on magnetic waves.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They're starting to create this, and it looks like instead of going to San Francisco to L.A., the team wants to initially do one from between L.A. and Las Vegas.
Very interesting. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people who commute from Las Vegas to L.A. and back every day.
Well, even more than commute. What if you could just go to Las Vegas for a show and come back home? It only takes 35, 40 minutes to get there.
Well, originally Las Vegas was a train stop.
Very popular, right?
Right? I mean, when they first put in the Transcontinental Railroad, Las Vegas meant the meadows, and literally the train stopped there to get water.
And really, Las Vegas would love it if L.A., Los Angelinos could make it there for an evening show and go back.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it'd be great for the show business. Not so great for the hotel business.
But, well, it sounds like it would be really fast.
Gambling,
according to the original plan, the Hyperloop was supposed to go from San Francisco to Los Angeles in 35 minutes flat. So it would be even shorter to Las Vegas. Yeah, you could go and have dinner in Las Vegas and then come back, you know. Yeah. It would only take you half an hour to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they'll have robo-cabs that pick you up. Las Vegas. Las Vegas is one of the leaders in robo-cab technology.
All right. Well, so just keep your eyes peeled for Hyperloop opportunities, folks.
A mere $16 billion to develop such an amazing idea.
And how much did they raise on their Kickstarter?
Not $16
billion. But they're not going to get paid until it's built, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
We'll see how motivated they stay.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting thing.
And, that's very cool.
That's unfolding.
All right. Well, this kind of goes with other anomalies of modern technology. How about the comedy club that charges per laugh?
Well, that's a very experimental thing. You heard about that? That was an experiment
in Barcelona.
Spain. Yeah, in Spain. I think the BBC reported on that. That was a big thing this year. That was this October. They experimented with charging users per laugh using a facial recognition technology to track how much they enjoyed the show. The software was installed on the tablets that were attached to the back of each seat.
It boggles the mind.
At the place called Theatre Nu Club, or I guess it was the new theater.
So it's like everybody,
new theater club.
Everybody comes in and they open up a tab, and their seat is like just an open bill, and every time they laugh, they get another ding.
Yeah.
Right? Another quarter down the chute.
Well, 30 cents.
Eventually they'd pretend not to laugh and not laugh.
Yeah. I bet. It's a real disincentive for laughing.
It might reprogram the audience. That's true. But meanwhile, they're looking at each laugh as being about 0.30 euros with a cap of 24 euros.
Oh, boy.
And so far, their takings have gone up for the club. They came up with this because it was to combat falling audience numbers in the comedy club.
Okay, so now we promise to make you laugh or you don't pay. Yeah. I'm sure that's a good crowd pleaser.
Yeah, yeah, Richard points out, laugh charging. It works great until you get the bill. You're not laughing then, huh?
Until the comedian says they're going to charge you every time you laugh. And then they'd laugh at that.
Yeah.
I'll get the all-you-can-laugh plan.
All right, folks. Well, there you go. That's getting the New Year jollies started earlier.
Yeah. What, we got about a minute left?
About a minute.
Cheapest plane ride I ever had was $10 from L.A. to Las Vegas. Back
really?
In the 60s.
Good for you.
Yeah.
$10? Is that real?
And all the chips were real silver dollars.
Wow. And sounds like you made money on that one.
Well, I saved him.
Well, okay. This is the year, I think, when we're all going to sequence our own microbiomes.
Well, we know you are.
Well, I did get my 23andMe
test
a couple years ago. No, this is where you'll be able to sequence your own microbiome. This will be really important for your health, especially because it'll give you personalized medicine, which is really the future for medicine, where it's really tailored specifically to us.
Okay.
Much
who
like
are you
going
to give your microbiome to, Dr. Future?
I'll give it to my health professionals and my robots, my personal robots.
All right, folks.
It'll
happy
keep me
New
healthy.
Year. Thanks for listening to Dr. Future Show on KSEO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, San Jose, Monterey.
Thank you so much.
Wherever you are in the future.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.